gives me really great honor to welcome personally in the studio Captain Scully Levine. I don't know why, but your name is just so familiar to me and has been for so long. Welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Simon.
I have your CV open in front of me. I had to scroll down with the mouse to get through the number of awards that you've won in your career. Many, 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 including the Order of the Baobab from the South African government. But the one that we want to talk to you about today is the accolade that you have just won in London. Tell us about that.
Yes, that was as a result of a nomination by the local Royal Air Force Officers Club that they sent through to England, to an organization called the Honorable Company of Air Pilots, whose principal sponsor is the Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip. The Grand Master is Prince Andrew, and then there are a number of other masters, and they award what they call Master Air Pilot or Master Air Navigator certificates annually, and my nomination was successful, so I was called to England to receive this award at the Guild Hall in the centre of London, a fantastic place, unbelievable, 700 years old, but renovated, of course, and with all the pomp and ceremony that the English are renowned for, and I received this award, the second South African in history to have to receive such an award.
And criteria for the reward, just give me a sense.
I've forgotten what the citation says, but it has to do with excellence. It has to do with bringing honor to the profession. It has to do with high standards that are maintained over a period of time, and also for a contribution that one has made to aviation. And in my case, what they stated, more or less the same as with the Order of the Baobab, for my ongoing and my terrific contribution to aviation in South Africa.
So I've noticed that. I mean, it's one thing you flew for SAA, it appears, for many years. But when you left SAA, you stayed very much involved with the training aspect, the teaching aspect, as well as the auditing aspect for Air Link and stuff like that. So air safety in Africa, have we got anything to be concerned about?
The standards in South Africa are very, very high. I think the only thing that we need to worry about is burgeoning bureaucracy. It is becoming very, very difficult to cope with bureaucracy that is running amok. But apart from that, we are natural pilots. You know, one of the most...
What do you mean?
South African pilots are natural pilots. I'm talking about the agencies that govern aviation. That's what we need to worry about. Is that what you asked? It's just becoming increasingly difficult to meet with the requirements of the governing agencies. But as when you say, do we have anything to worry about? The South African pilot is a fantastic pilot. I don't know what it is. It's something in the genes of the guys.
Really?
And all over the world, South African pilots are of the most sought after anywhere. You know, that's why in the Middle East they snap our pilots up. In the Far East they snap them up. Wherever they go, they excel. They are good pilots.
You know, it's so true what you're saying, because when I spent time in Australia, and I spent quite a while there, I got onto a low-cost carrier, and the pilot welcomed us all on board, and it was, hello, welcome to the aeroplane. I just thought, like, who? It was like Tiger Air or something really weird. And I thought, how do South African pilots get to fly Air Asia and Tiger Air? Clearly, it's what you're saying. Clearly, the training is good.
Yeah.
And they are...
South African pilots are everywhere, you know, because a lot of them want to leave for greener pastures, perhaps. But the thing is, the as I said, the Middle Eastern, the Far Eastern, and wherever, they... they're on the lookout and they love South African pilots.
Tell me something, because we have a little bit of time. So I'm interested in you, the person, the little boy who grows up and wants to be a pilot. I mean, we all do, but we all realize that's not exactly possible and go on and do other things. What was different with you?
There was no doubt in my mind, no doubt whatsoever. I was son of a Royal Air Force World War II pilot. My dad came back to the little town of Petersburg with his English bride, and there was an Air Force station outside of Petersburg, and they had these airplanes that they did multi-engine training for the pilots on, and at the end of the war, they were cutting these aeroplanes up and melting them down, selling them to metal merchants. Okay. And my dad managed to get one of these things, and he tied it to the boot of his motor car and dragged it through the center of Petersburg, brought it home, and declared that that would be my playpen. So I never ever had a sandpit. I had an aeroplane in the garden. And then after work, he'd take me into the aeroplane. He'd go through all the checks with me, etc., etc. And that was it, you know. He injected me with this enthusiasm for flying, and it was going to be flying, only flying and nothing but flying. So I grew up my childhood, and as soon as I matriculated, I went off to learn to fly.
And then you landed up with SAA.
I trained in the Air Force, 3 years in the Air Force, and then I did a lot of civilian flying. And at the tender age of 24, I joined South African Airways, and I was with them for 38 years with South African Airways, 9 years with Mango, because I was too old to fly for South African Airways. So I was lucky enough to get a job thereafter and fly for another 9 years with Mango. So all in all, an airline career of 47 years out of a flying career of 55 years.
Tell me something. When you get in a plane and you start an engine and you taxi and you take off, is there still, after all these years, a thrill? Or is it jaded and...
Simon, very, very luckily, I fly aerobatics and, stunts in the sky, and I display, etc., etc. And nothing gives you the adrenaline rush that gives you. So whereas I got a little bit tired eventually of the humdrum of airline flying, I've always had the excitement of aerobatic flying, and I fly with two of my three kids. Fly together with me in the various teams that we operate, and that keeps me going. That keeps me going. And I hope it'll keep me going until I'm about 80.
There's a mystique around people like yourself. You know, you kind of fulfilled the dream that the rest of us, well, can only dream of. It's quite remarkable. Our listeners are weighing in. Charles has got hold of us, and he's asked me to put the following question to you. Did you ever get around to building a plane using a combi engine. You were apparently talking about it some years ago. Is that for real? A combi?
Yes. Combi, you know, Volkswagen engines, the early Beetle and the Combi, those engines are what they call opposed engines, and they're air-cooled, not water-cooled, and the aeroplanes are built with engines exactly the same way. They're opposed. They look like Volkswagen engines. Therefore, with just a couple of minor modifications, you could put a Volkswagen engine into an aeroplane of your own design.
Wow.
So, yes, I flew a number of aeroplanes with Volkswagen engines in them.
Okay, and then there's another question for you. A comment. Clifford S. Scully, such a mensch. One of my highlights. Flying jump seat in a 737 with Scully as captain. Mazel tov on the reward. And that's from Clifford S. I hope you know who.
Thank you. That is Clifford Solosh. And he is the son of one of the founder pilots. A pilot that was one of the founders of the Israeli Air Force.
Oh, really?
Manny Solosh, yeah. So Clifford has got flying in his DNA as well.
Okay, and then this comment, I'm not sure if it's for real or not. Has Scully ever met Mulder? What does that mean? And has he ever seen a UFO? That's kind of a bit weird. You don't have to answer that one. The Mulder bit got me confused. Have you ever met Mulder? I'm not sure I know who Mulder.
No.
Who Mulder is. Okay, so we will leave that.
Yeah. Not that I know of.
Air safety, you've been involved with air safety, I see from your resume. It's quite a topical subject at the moment. I think Boeing have not exactly covered themselves in any glory whatsoever. Would you fly in a 737 MAX?
I would actually. You know, there's a little bit more to this than meets the eye, and I'm not in a position to make any formal statement, but I'm following it from all sides, and I'm able to follow it technically as well.
Okay.
So, as I say, there is a little bit more to this than, actually a lot more than meets the eye, and yes, I would fly in the 737 MAX.
You would fly? Just, it seemed to me that a lot of blame was being put at the door of self-regulation, that the American aviation authorities were expecting Boeing to self-regulate. Is that a cop-out?
Well, they were allowing, not expecting, they were.
I want to thank you so much for taking the time and the effort to come into studio. I've totally enjoyed discussing all these issues with you. And I think I'm going to put it out there that I'd really love to have you back and attack things from a different angle. But thank you. And I can see from our SMS line that our listeners do too. I'm going to be very naughty and steal 1 minute from the news because we've had a Hamor weigh in and say, can you ask Scully, what do you believe the future of suborbital and orbital aviation is?
I think there's a very, very good, I think that's the way to go, and I think that we're moving in that direction. You know, as technology improves, so we will achieve a lot more. You know, and you only need to see what the entrepreneurs are doing, sending aeroplanes into space and making use of sophisticated composites, etc., etc., etc. So, yes, I believe there is a future for it.
Captain Scully, thank you so much. That was really worth crossing late to the news for. Apologies to you for the late crossing, but, yeah, I hope you think it was worth it. Mm.